Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here is Bob.
In 2 Samuel chapter 3 today, dealing with one of the experiences in the early life of David, I would like to recommend if you're going to be a teacher and teaching this aspect of David's life, the very best thing you could do is to read about 8 chapters back and about 8 chapters forward. If you can get the feel of what's happening in David's life right now, these chapters are going to make great sense. But isolated completely from what goes before and what comes after, they don't have the continuity that you're really going to need to try to explain this and apply it to the people that you're going to be teaching. Now, I'm going to begin in verse 6. It mentions a series of David's sons in verses 1 through 5. 3 of them rebelled against him, and 3 of them we never hear about again, so apparently died as infants. Now, it came about while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David. Now, that would be basically against the Benjamites, who were the basic followers of Saul, and the followers of David, which would be Judah and other identified tribes and friends and mercenaries and that kind of thing. Now, notice what happened. That Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now, Abner, of course, was the commander of the armies under Saul. And he really was the power behind the throne after the death of Saul. He was a very strong military man. And he's going to put Ish-bosheth on the throne, but he's really the power behind the throne. Now, verse 7, it says, "Now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah." Now, a concubine was a socially acceptable marriage partner. They did not have the full rights and inheritance of a wife, but they were socially accepted, and they did have limited rights of responsibility and inheritance for their children. Now, notice it mentions whose name was Rizpah. Now, we learn more about her from chapter 21, verse 8 and following. She apparently was a very gallant lady. And I'm really not sure whether this actually happened or if this was a trumped-up charge or what. Abner's not going to deny it. He's just going to get mad. He was even accused of it. And so it's not real certain what's happening here. But the reason is so significant. A concubine or a wife or a part of a king's harem were considered to be the personal property of the king. If someone else took part of the king's harem, it was a sign that they wanted to become king or they were trying to conspire to become king. You ought to see chapter 16, verse 22, and 1 Kings 2, 22 and 23 for similar accounts of this. So apparently Ish-bosheth thought that Abner wanted to be king. Now, if Abner wanted to be king, he could have very easily. And this seems to be a real ruse to me. Notice where it mentions, "And Ish-bosheth said to Abner." Now, Abner had made him king, and we see from chapter 2, verses 8 through 10, he was one of Saul's children. "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" Well, here is the problem. Ish-bosheth has moved his court from the tribe of Benjamin clear across on the eastern side of Jordan in the territory of Gad to get away from the Philistine pressure. And in all this move, I'm sure there was a lot of psychological, emotional, as well as military pressure. So if you have a map in the back of your Bibles, I would like for you to turn there for a moment, and I want to show you how far away in the wilderness Saul's family, Ish-bosheth, had to move. All right, notice. Now, if you'll have a map, it has a question mark by this place name, but it locates it right there on the out, on the border between Manasseh and Gad. Now, David's throne is going to be down in Hebron, way down here in the southern part of Judah, pretty close to the wilderness. Now, of course, Jerusalem is not made the capital until David overcomes the Jebusites there. And later in his reign, he'll make Jerusalem his capital. And that's where God finally chooses for the temple to be built during the reign of Solomon. But right now it's Hebron for David, and this other name, Mahanaim, for Ish-bosheth. Okay? Now, Abner was very angry over the words of Ishbosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah?" I think he was saying, "Am I a useless traitor that you should accuse me of something like this?" Have you ever done something nice for somebody and they not be appreciative and it just burns you to the quick? Abner had put this man on the throne. Abner had kept him there. Abner had was fighting his battles. And here this guy comes and accuses him of an illicit love affair with one of Saul's concubines. Well, it burnt him. Now, I don't know if it's true or not, but I don't think it's true. Why the circumstances it was he'd be accused of this, I don't know. But he says, "Friend, who do you think I am?" He said, "The very person you think I am, I'm going to become." Means he's going to put his allegiance behind a united monarchy under David. It really burned him. "Today I show kindness to the house of Saul your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and I have I not delivered you into the hands of David? And yet today you charge me with a guilt concerning this woman?" He just couldn't believe it. "May God do so to Abner and more also, if as the Lord has sworn to David," I do not accomplish this for him, "to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul to establish the throne of David over Israel and Judah from Dan to Beersheba." Now, of course, Dan to Beersheba, as you know, the tribe of Dan moved because of the Philistine pressure. And they moved clear to the north. And so it became a proverb to talk about the northernmost city was Dan, the southernmost city was Beersheba. And so that's a way of talking about the whole land. Now, Saul's was known as Israel, and David apparently was known as Judah, and Saul's going to try to combine them into one monarchy because he got so mad at Saul's descendant for this accusation. Look at verse 11. "And Ishbosheth could no longer answer Abner a word because he was afraid of him." This little milquetoast king shouldn't have popped off, and when he did pop off, he should have followed through on it, but he just let it go. He didn't know what to say. He realized how powerful Abner was, and he just got himself in a mess. "Then Abner sent messengers to David to his place, saying," now David's in Hebron, "Whose is the land? Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you to bring all Israel over to you." Now, the ideal of covenant is an agreement between two people with corresponding responsibilities, and that's what Abner is planning on doing. "And he said, 'Good, I will make a covenant with you, but I demand one thing of you, namely that you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see me.'" Now, you remember, Saul had given David, Michal, as a sign of friendship, and also because David paid the dowry price, which was 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Yuck! That's 1 Samuel 18:20-27. But later, when Saul got mad at David, he took David's wife and gave her to another man. 1 Samuel 25:44. Now, it's real important that David get Michal back for several reasons. First of all, was the political reasons. Michal was Saul's daughter, and David had been publicly disgraced by his wife being given to another man by the king, which showed a total disregard for David. So what David wants, he wants the king to reunite him and Michal and show that he is publicly being reunited or brought back to a place of preeminence in Israel. Now, I think he did love Michal originally, and Michal loved him. How much of that has faded over these years, I don't know, because she's been married to another man now for 8 or 9 years. It's a real problem situation. Saul really, really opened a can of worms when he did this to David as trying to really hurt David, and I'm sure it did. Now, notice it says in verse 14, "So David sent messengers to Ishbosheth," not to Abner, to Ishbosheth, "and said, 'You return Michal.'" It was real important to David it be a public act of the state in reinstating David's rightful marriage and ownership of Michal, because he paid a dowry for her, and that understanding he had bought her. Now, you see down, it says, "Saul's son saying, 'Give me my wife Michal, to whom I was betrothed for 100 foreskins of the Philistines.'" Now, the Philistines were the only people who were uncircumcised in the area, and David delivered twice this many. It's a pretty gruesome act to go through the dead bodies of Philistines and take their foreskins just to get a dowry for David to marry somebody. And Ish-bosheth sent and took her from her husband, from Paltiel, and the son of Lachish. Now, look what's going to happen. This husband, in verse 16, her husband went with her, weeping as he went, and followed her as far, and we don't know where that city is, but it's right on the borderline between Israel and Judah. Boy, it broke this husband's heart. He'd been married to this girl for 9 or 10 years. Apparently, he loved her because of who she was, and there was something of the political nature in David's marriage. But boy, can you see the disruptions here already beginning in David's family life? My goodness, he paid an awful high price to be king, I want you to know. Verse 17. Now Abner had consultation with the elders of Israel. Now the elders of Israel refers to the older chieftains of the tribal groups. We might often call them sheikhs. And they had very powerful in local areas. And usually they were consulted on matters. It began in the time of Moses when Moses appointed elders to help him administrate. And it comes down to this time. In past times, you were seeking for David to be king over you. Now, that shows the fact that some of these chieftains, even in the northern 10 tribes, really wanted David to be their king. And so it shows there's a popularity, a groundswell growing. Now then, do it. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, by the hand of my servant David. Now, my servant, I think this is possibly the origin of the New Testament phrase, servant or slave. Here it's an honorific title of God's uniquely equipped messenger and spokesman. I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of their enemies. Now, there seem to be possibly two references that Abner is making. Number one, 1 Samuel 9:16 and 1 Samuel 15:28. Verse 19. And Abner also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin, and in addition to Abner, went on to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron, and all that seemed good to Israel and to the whole house of Benjamin. Even Saul's own tribe agreed with Abner that David should be king over a united monarchy and not Ish-bosheth. That shows the popularity and also the power of Abner. Then Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron. And David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. And Abner said to David, let me arise and go and gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you, that you may be king over all your soul desires. So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. Now this was kind of a pre-covenant meeting, a pre-ordination meeting, to kind of work out the details of a smooth transition to a united monarchy. And David sent Abner away in peace to collect the elders and the tribes and to come back and make David king over the united Israel. That's what David had wanted so long. And it looked like it was finally going to come to fruition through Abner and these foolish words of Ish-bosheth. And look what happened. And behold, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away in peace. When Joab and all the army that was with him arrived, they told Joab, saying, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has sent him away, and he has gone in peace. Now, Abner and Joab were counterparts. Abner was a nephew of David. He was David's sister's son, very powerful military man and leader of David's army. Well, Abner was his counterpart on Saul's soldiers. Now, they had a real bad fight in 2 Samuel 1. And on Gilboa, many, many people had died on both sides, but mostly on the Benjamite side. And so what basically happened is one of Joab's brothers was killed in this fight. And Joab held Abner personally responsible for this death. So there was real blood feud between these two groups. And Joab couldn't believe that David had done this without consulting him. And he was furious. I'm sure his pride was hurt. He was mad. And we're going to see what he does. Then Joab came to the king and said, what's the matter with you? What have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why have you sent him away? And he is already gone. You know Abner, the son of Ner, that he came to deceive you and to learn of your goings out and comings in and find out all that you are doing. Now, this is the military mind of Joab. He said he's come to spy it out. He hadn't come to make a deal with you. He's just come to spy things out. Now, I'm really wondering if Joab used that as an excuse or he really believed that. We never have the psychological insight of what's happening, just the actions that people do. Now, Joab is going to kill Abner because he killed Joab's brother. But the pretense is that Abner was trying to spy on David and had tricked the king. Now, look what happens. Then Joab came out from David, and he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the well of Sirah, but David did not know it. Now, Sirah, Josephus tells us, is about 2.5 miles north of Hebron. So Abner hadn't got very far. Boy, Joab went right in to see David and sent a message saying, David wants to see you one more time, Abner. One more time, David wants to see you. Now, David was totally ignorant of this. Look at verse 27. So when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the middle of the gate to speak with him privately. Now, this "in the middle of the gate" refers to the little rooms that were built on to the city gate so that if one of them fell, they could defend another one. And they were private little rooms, ironically, that were often used in time of peace for the place of justice and local trials and that kind of thing. And so he took him privately, or at least semi-privately, over to the side. And there he struck him in the belly so that he died on account of the blood of Asahel, his brother. And you all see chapter 2, verses 18 through 28 for this account. Now, Joab was acting as a blood avenger. Now, that goes back to Numbers 35, 26, and 27. But the problem with this is that Hebron was a city of refuge. You see that from Joshua chapter 20, verse 7. And if Abner was in the city, he couldn't kill him even if Joab was the blood avenger or the Goel, the kinsman redeemer. Now, we learn from 1 Kings 2:5 that David never got over this impulsive act. And when he was dying, he passed on to Solomon. He said, don't forget what Joab did. And he said that he acted inappropriately. What does that mean? He killed somebody out of revenge of something that happened in an act of war. And men were not individually responsible for acts of killing a relative in times of war. But Joab killed Abner anyway. And afterward, when David heard about it, he said, I and my kingdom are innocent before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Nun. Now, killing innocent blood was a terrible crime in the Old Testament, and it had lingering curse consequences on the people involved. And David said, I want everybody to know that I didn't have any part of this. What Joab did in reality was stop the uniting of the Jewish people under one monarch. It took years and years and years more for David to finally unite the kingdom. Joab, in one act of personal vengeance, had stopped the plan of God for the uniting of the kingdom under David. I bet David was fit to be tied when he heard about this. You see, the same problem that Ish-bosheth had with a strong military man, Abner, is somewhat of a problem that David had with the strong military man, Joab. He couldn't control him. The man acted impulsively on his own instead of listening to God's anointed. And so it was a break of faith, a break of covenant, a break of chain of command, and David was just furious about it. Listen to what he says. It's a curse in verse 29 that he puts on his own nephew. Listen to this. May it fall on the head of Joab and on all his father's house. May there not fail from the house of Joab one who has a discharge, or who is a leper, or who takes hold of a distaff, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. Now, David, I know he's angry and he's impulsive, but my goodness, he cursed this house. The first one is one who has a discharge. Well, if you go back to Leviticus 15, that meant this man was ceremonially unclean to ever appear in the temple services. It says a man who is a leper. If you look at Leviticus 13 and 14, leprosy was a unique disease that the people that day believed was given by God as a curse for evil doing. A man who takes hold of the distaff, now that's one translation meaning, may all the men of your house do women's work. Or another possible translation is, lean on a staff, which means may all of your male children be born cripples. And then he says, who falls by the sword, means they're going to lose in every battle they participate in. Or who lacks bread, this is the curse of poverty. Boy, David just piled up. They're going to be crippled. They're going to be cursed. They're going to fall in war. They're going to be ceremonially unclean. They're going to be a leper. But you know, Joab just couldn't believe what his relative had said about him. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner. Now, we don't have Abishai mentioned in the account, because he had put his brother Asahel to death in the Battle of Gibeon. Now, go back and read chapters 1 and 2, and you'll catch up on what's happening here to set the stage for this. Verse 31 now. By the way, I think it's ironical in verse 29. Joab killed Abner as a point of family honor, to uphold his family honor. And David turned around and cursed his whole family because of what he did. It's ironical, isn't it? Verse 31. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him. Now, Joab and his family had to participate in the elaborate state funeral for Abner. Not only did they have to be present, but Joab and his family had to tear their clothes, gird sackcloth on, and lament over Abner and walk in the funeral procession. David made the man who killed him to have all of the signs of Oriental mourning and to participate in that state funeral for the man that he treacherously killed in ambush. Ooh, man. And King David walked behind the bier or the bed. That shows it was a state funeral. Okay, it's an elaborate deal because David wanted everybody to know that he did not have any duplicity in the death of Abner. In the same kind of way, he wanted nobody to believe he had any duplicity in the death of Saul a few lessons earlier. Now, thus they buried Abner in Hebron. Now, notice they didn't bury him in the north. They buried him in the capital of David's kingdom, Hebron. And the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. I think David was sincerely moved. I think he was crying because of his own condition, and I think he was crying over the breach of trust that Joab had caused to a man who had eaten at his table. You see, Joab had broken so many Oriental customs. For Abner to eat with David was a sign that David committed to him his protection, his friendship, his covenant. And here comes his own commander and breaches that covenant and takes a man's life. Well, I tell you, for an Oriental, that was hard to choke on. The king chanted a lament, a funeral dirge, for Abner and said, "Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, nor your feet put in fetters. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen." He says, you weren't a prisoner of war, but you died unknowingly as a fool, as an act of treachery by a wicked man. Boy, don't you know Joab was having a hard time listening to all this? And all the people wept over him. And all the people came to persuade David to eat bread while it was still day. But David vowed, saying, "May God do so to me, and more also, if I taste bread or anything else, for the sun goes down." Now, David was taking an oath. Now, an oath is bringing God's name into something, saying, "God, if I do this, you do this." We have a little cross my heart and hope to die kind of thing. That's somewhat of this, but in a theological sense. Now, usually there's a big dinner after the funerals. David would not participate. And they asked him to come eat. He said, "I'm not going to eat till the sun goes down." Why that? Because the funeral day would be over, and a Jewish day begins at 6 o'clock in the evening. David said, I'm going to fast today, because I'm really in mourning for Abner. And what I have done to him through my unknowing acts of my representative, Joab. And all the people took note of it, and it pleased them, just as everything the king did pleased all the people. Now, David was a popular man. You go back to 1 Samuel 18:16. Now, these representatives, these 20 men that came with Abner, I'm sure they were there for this funeral, and I'm sure they took the word back to the northern 10 tribes. But this just ruined David's chances of having a united monarchy for many years. Whether he knew it or not, here was Abner that was bringing the kingdom, put in his lap, killed by David's nephew in an act of absolute treachery. Okay? So all the people and all Israel understood that day that it had not been the will of the king to put Abner the son of Ner to death. Then the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I am weak today, though the anointed king and these men, the son of Zerah, are too difficult for me. May the Lord repay the evildoer according to his evil." Now, the anointed king meant he was in charge. He was God's official representative. Now, anointed is the same where we get the word Messiah from. Calvin built his Christology of the Messiah around the three offices that were anointed: prophet, priest, and king. And Jesus fulfills all those offices. Now, this lady mentioned is David's sister. When he says, "They are too difficult for me, may the Lord repay the evildoer," what David's saying is, I can't control these men. May God's will be done, and may He do justice to them. Well, we lost a chance for the United Monarchy early. It's going to take years and years, and many difficult things are going to happen because of the impetuous acts of one man. I think the impetuous acts of man can sometimes thwart the will of God for a period, bring great havoc into what God would normally have. I've enjoyed being with you. I'll see you again, same time, same place next week.